You're listening to an OTB AM podcast. You can watch the show or listen live every weekday morning at 7:45 AM. Subscribe to the OTB AM podcast stream for more stuff just like this.
All right, a very good morning to you. It's Limerick's World and we're all just living in it after yesterday's unbelievable finale to the hurling season. Conor McKeown of the Herald is with us. How are you?
All right, Jerry.
We were just saying off air there, it wasn't a great game until the last 10 minutes turned it into an All-Ireland final for the ages.
Yeah, and it was probably a fitting finale to an All-Ireland final given the season that we'd had. It would have been a little bit of an anti-climax, I think, had the game kind of laboured towards the inevitable conclusion that it was kind of looking from the point that Limerick scored their third goal. But even still, I think those kind of famine-ending All-Irelands are great occasions. And it did have that feeling yesterday, being there, you know, to see Limerick, you know, bury the demons and win their first All-Ireland since 73. You know, they won't have cared how they did it, but the fact that they hung on in such dramatic circumstances, I think it'll probably highlight the sense of relief that they have this morning.
Yeah, some goals from the 90s late as well.
Like, yeah, I think so.
If they'd lost that, it would have been like, uh-oh.
Worse than 94.
Well, John Kiely made that point. Like, he said he was an extended panel member in 94. He watched it happen. And he said 96 against Wexford as well, which I think Limerick hit the front early in that game, but I don't remember it kind of being we threw it away. But, I know Kiely came in for a small bit of flack for how he handled his press conference after the semi-final when he was very... He came in wired and he told the journalists he was going to shut it down if anybody tried to make contact with his players outside the press event that was organised. But you could see that that was part of everything, that he didn't want players bogged down with kind of the sins of the past or the historical element of the whole thing. But those players don't seem to have that. Like, these new Limerick players just seem to be... They seem to... They don't tap into any of that sort of stuff. It doesn't affect them, you know. And I thought the most impressive thing about Limerick yesterday, like, it wasn't the perfect performance or anything like that, but the most impressive thing was that they did things the way... They didn't make any concessions for Galway. Like, there was a bit of talk maybe going into the game that Dan Morrissey might go to full back because Mike Casey mightn't have been the biggest man to handle Johnny Glynn. Or
Casey was sensational, I thought.
Sensational. And they might have gone man-to-man with Joe Canning with one of the defenders and let Declan Hannan sit. But they didn't. Like, they lined out almost 1-15.
Yeah.
They played the game on their terms and they wanted to win it by just being better than Galway, and I think they did.
We were trying to make the case earlier that Casey might have been man of the match, but...
Well, you were trying to make the case.
Enough happens between the 50th and the 80th minute that it's hard to go... I mean, but there's definitely the case we made that Glynn not having an impact on that game and that being the thing that thwarts Galway allows Limerick to build up that lead.
Oh, I think so. Like the four balls that went in, now that they weren't particularly good deliveries, like, they weren't Johnny Glynn, you know, perfect deliveries. But Casey had him beaten, and it was in the way that kind of Noel Hickey used to defend bigger men, you know what I mean? Like, your job is to stop him touching the ball, whatever that entails. They made no allowance. It was only in the second half, when Declan Hannan didn't follow Joe Canning, that they had the benefit of somebody sitting in front of Johnny Glynn. But Galway moved Glynn then out to the wing, and Dan Morrissey did mark him from about the 25th minute till half time. And I think he set up a good point, but other than that, he wasn't a factor in the game. And I think only but for the injury, I think Mike Casey would have been a very strong contender for man of the match.
It's ironic, isn't it, that the one goal that Galway did get from the high ball in and the catch and turn into the back of the net was Conor Whelan, and it wasn't Johnny Glynn who got that goal. Like, I'm very surprised I didn't see him out around the middle of the pitch a lot earlier in the game, because, like, even just from talking to a few Galway fans around other matches throughout the year, like the first Clare game, for example, they were like, no way can we put Johnny Glynn in full forward. We need him around the middle of the park too much. So it was very surprising that after 10, 15 minutes yesterday, they didn't realise what was about to happen here and they didn't bring him out to the middle of the park, because to a certain extent, a short puck out while they were getting initial possession was essentially themselves shooting themselves in the foot, as we saw with a number of the goals.
Yeah, I've heard a case made maybe that Johnny Glynn, because he's gone so well at full forward, it kind of... You know, you look at how Galway played last year up through the lines, and then all their attackers are getting on an awful lot more ball because it's not quite as direct. But I think that when you have Johnny Glynn on the edge of the square, it forces your hand a bit to kind of to rain balls down on top of him. Now, Galway tried to vary it yesterday, but you know, we had this conversation that when you lose, everything you do is wrong, and the things that don't happen for you in a given game or maybe in a given year become magnified. But this year, there are a couple of Galway forwards that haven't gone as well as last year. And, you know, like Jason Farr came on as a blood sub and then came back off and then came back on, you know.
After Cooney had gone and missed one in the meantime.
And Conor Cooney is one of those guys that really didn't get as well going. Like, if you did, I was doing those player ratings that we do in the paper. But I was doing the Limerick player ratings, and like it was a 1 point game. And I'm sure if you pick up any newspaper this morning,
the difference in the two,
difference in the two, particularly in the front six of the two, would just be
It was a 1 point hammering.
It was a 1 point hammering, is exactly what it is. And Limerick should have won the game by 6, 7, 8 points. But hurling doesn't work like that. And if you allow a team back into it, you can see what nearly happened.
It did feel in the first half a little bit like Galway had decided that Glynn had an advantage on the edge of the square. And so no matter what, they were going to try and feed him. And it did strike me that, like, if you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And Galway were stuck in that just a little bit in that first half. When actually what they needed to do was think, well, let's score 26, 27 points like we always do. And we'll worry about the goals. And, like, we will actually find those goal chances a little bit later
on. I think it kind of it panned out like that a small bit, because I got a lot of the time in the first half, Galway tried to nearly walk the ball through Limerick, and it didn't work. Like, they got bottled up. The Limerick tackling was very, very aggressive, but very well organised as well. And I think if you're in that situation where it's very huddled around the middle, and your choices are try and kind of weave your way through this morass of bodies, or look up and hit it to the man who's got 10 yards of space around him and is 5 inches taller than the fella he's marking. I think it's just an inevitability that you're going to do it. So I think Mike Casey should take huge credit this morning. He didn't make, I think, the official man of the match shortlist. And the three players that did were worthy recipients as well. But I just think, but for the injury, we were all waiting for that first ball to Johnny Glynn to see would happen. Like, that was going to be a big moment in the match.
And the roar was unbelievable.
Yeah, and Casey won that, and the second and the third one as well.
Yeah, I know, he was brilliant. A couple of things about this. We'll obviously get into it in a bit more detail later on, but Galway didn't play like a team who has the confidence of being All-Ireland champions. It's not like I'm not suggesting the occasion got them or anything, but their touch was bad. They just didn't seem like they fully were at the peak of their powers. Now, they weren't really against Clare either, so you can't just say it was because Limerick played really well and Limerick did play really well. Were they just not as good towards the end of the season as they were at the start of the year?
Maybe the occasion did get to them. Like, can we really sit here this morning and say for sure that the occasion didn't get to Galway? I think that this whole idea of Joe Cannon coming out after the last game and saying people attacked our character suddenly means everybody's like, oh, well, we can't attack our character because Joe Cannon is going to tell us all off for this. Maybe that's what happened yesterday. What else? Like, it has to be one of the factors in such a desperate performance from a team that most people would agree is the best 15 in Ireland. Like, of course, I think we would agree that when you go out to the 23, Limerick have a better set of players, but 1 to 15, Galway have a better set of players. And you don't want to call it a choking, but they severely underperformed when the pressure was at its highest yesterday, when they were about to back up what they did last year and put their name down as one of the great teams of this century, put themselves up there with that Cork team, and put themselves right below that rung of that Kilkenny team. And they didn't do it. They didn't show up yesterday. So maybe the occasion did get to them. I don't think we can completely discount that.
Yeah, I just think it was the law of diminishing returns over the course of the year. Like, there were symptoms of this in the previous game, and it was magnified yesterday. I actually think it was a great testament to Galway's character that they got it to a situation where Joe Cannon could have sent the game to a replay. And, like, I don't want to go through too many what ifs, but, like, Joe gets that free. They blow the full-time whistle. There's 3 weeks to prepare for a replay.
Yeah.
Garold McInerney has 3 weeks to get back into health. John Hanbury has 3 weeks to get back into their health. Galway have a rest, which they only had 2 weeks since the All-Ireland semi-final. Like, when Galway won back-to-back All-Irelands in 87 and 88, they played 5 games in total, one of which were against London. And yesterday was their 9th game of the summer. And that just has to take its toll, you know. And, I don't think they performed well. But the fact that they got it back to a point against a team who probably did play well, particularly a team whose forwards all went so well on the day, I think it was great testament to their character. And I don't think it was, you know, it was an underperformance, and they lacked a bit of energy rather than anything else. Like, I thought the big feature of yesterday, and it was symptomatic of the difference between the both teams, obviously not really in the scoreboard, but over the course of the game, was the fact that all three Limerick goals came from Limerick forwards turning over Galway defenders. Like, if you get one goal from that in an All-Ireland final, it's a huge lift. They got three, and that was symptomatic of the fact that the Limerick forwards were so vigilant. They worked so hard. They highlighted one great score last night where Graeme Mulcahy came back onto his man, and he actually left his man, but they were so kind of. John Kiley made the point that nearly being a forward nowadays is the hardest job in inter-county hurling, because you have to work so hard.
And you're expected to score as well.
Yeah, and then your energy levels are down when you actually get the ball. But to get three goals off turnovers, like the last time we saw that was in 2016 when Tipperary hammered Kilkenny in the final. And every time a ball came down and one of the Kilkenny full backline were coming out with it, before they had a chance to look up, they were getting nailed and they were turning over ball and they were giving away frees for over carrying it. And like, that's the sort of stuff that just wins you all Ireland.
Time for the papers.
OTB AM.
Thanks to Screwfix.ie, championing the trade with a choice of over 20,000 quality trade products.
Okay, so it's a full wraparound from the Examiner to do justice to this at last. I'm sure there were 6 million photographs that they could have taken from yesterday. So the Examiner, Michael Moynihan, with the opening story, a finale in keeping with the season to remember, with Limerick the last man standing. So that on the whistle stuff is always pretty hard after something like that, where you're like, hang on a second, what just happened?
Do you like prepare a couple of lines for in case something is amazing? But then again, you just can't prepare for every sort of scenario.
You mean like the lyrics to Linger?
You tend to have a couple of ideas going into your head what the narrative is going to be anyway. So like, sometimes you just replace one with the other. But it's like, I didn't have to do any of it yesterday, and I was glad of it, because I can remember I think it might have been the 2013 All-Ireland final, the replay, and it was a Saturday evening, so I might have been working for the Sunday or something like that, and you were right up against it, and some guy starts that you barely even knew of, and he scored 3 goals, and then the whole, like, it was just, it was pandemonium. So yeah, the on the whistle stuff, sometimes you can read it and it's like, you know, an intro as to what happened, but then 800 words suggesting the opposite is going to happen.
Yeah,
so.
And then a few paragraphs tacked on at the end to wrap it all up nicely. So Limerick end the 45-year drought is the front page of the Irish Independent this morning. And then it is redemption on the back. That's Cian Lynch. I thought Cian Lynch was really good and put himself, like, I mean, I'm biased because I've been on the Cian Lynch bandwagon all year, but like, he's definitely the conversation for Hurler of the Year.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Now, I thought Joe Canning won it yesterday. I thought what Joe did yesterday to get them back into the game, and like, had he nailed that last read, like, that was Cú Chulainn stuff. Like, you know, it was hurling from a different level, and he took it on his shoulders. Like, the great trick that Micheál Donoghue has performed over the last couple of years was not being so reliant on Joe Canning, but actually that's what happened. Yeah, that's the default that they switched into yesterday, when a couple of their forward options had been so, like, Conor Whelan was wrapped up really well with Sean Finn yesterday despite that goal. Johnny Glynn didn't get into it. Conor Cooney didn't really get into it either. Cathal Mannion really didn't get it. So you're only talking with Joe and Joseph Cooney. So like, in that situation, to make a game of it, I think, was probably testament to Canning's performance.
Let It Linger is the back page headline on the Times Ireland edition. Cian Lynch celebrates with his mother Valerie after Limerick won their first Liam McCarthy Cup in 45 years. Very lucky that she managed to make it onto the field. We were over in the corner of the Hogan, and it looked like kind of a plan B was in operation. And over at, sorry, we were in the Cusick. There's the photograph there, and over in the far side, it looked like people were being allowed through from the Hogan stand. But somebody tried to make it on from the hill, and suddenly four cops were like lying on him and handcuffing him and leading him away. So like, from the greatest moment of his life to being led away in chains by the Gardaí, you're like, well, that's a little bit harsh. I mean, I hope they took him around the corner and let him go, as opposed to like...
Well, I always wondered, at what stage does it become the plan B? Like, the plan B is open the floodgates.
Yeah.
But like, what is the...
How many people need to get through?
What is the straw that breaks the camel's back? Like, we were talking about this yesterday. We were standing where I was in the press box, watching it all unfold, but where I was sitting happened to be close enough to where the edge of the crowd was. And Michael Verney and Michael Foley can attest to this because they were sitting beside me, but there was a man, must have been in his late 40s, early 50s, who was from Limerick, who was inconsolable with crying. Like, he was, and we were just saying, like, if they managed to avoid a plan B and a pitch evasion when Limerick won the All-Ireland, you know,
that's it.
It's up to Mayo now.
Yeah. Like, that's...
Treaties Titans hold on to end 45 years of hurt is the headline on Keith Duggan's piece at Croke Park. David neutralised Goliath's aerial threat. Mike Casey overcame Glynn's 5-inch height advantage in ingenious fashion. And I think probably when everything kind of counts down a bit, we'll probably look back on Casey's performance. Like, does a performance like that in an Ireland final get you an All-Star? Is that like, I mean,
it has to.
Does it get you an All-Star? Now, like, Mike Casey didn't start the championship, if you remember. If you remember, he came out for Seamus Hickey when Hickey was struggling in the first game in Munster. But like, Mike Casey, he was really good. If you go back to the All-Ireland club final and the replay on Con O'Callaghan for an Impersic, like, yeah. O'Callaghan was very muted by his by basically every other hurling match that he's ever played, and that was because of Mike Casey. So at that stage,
Tommy Walsh was still putting Conor Callaghan in his top 10 hurlers in the country.
Number one.
No walk in the park. Sellers' trip is a serious test of Reds' Premier League credentials. That's the fact that Palace always do pretty well against Liverpool, and pretty special. Bell Philly Pollyanna beats the boys as D'Souza ends Group 1 drought. So Pretty Pollyanna enhanced her status as Kipco 1,000 Guineas favourite at Deauville yesterday, coming out on top in a fierce duel with Signora Cabello in the pre-morning.
Some fella called Conor McKeown leading the way on the back page of the Herald this morning. Limerick end famine. Kylie relieved to exercise ghosts of past after 45-year wait for Liam. You've also got Pogba not happy with attitude. We'll get into that a little bit later on with Daniel Harris. Dramatic scenes at the Amex yesterday as Manchester United got beaten 3-2. The back page of the Irish Daily Mail is Treaty Titans. Youth Rules Day as Limerick hold nerve for glory. Limerick 3-16, Galway 2-18.
Treaty Titans, a popular one.
Dream Team, says the back of the Mirror. That's Treaty boss afraid of waking up after crazy croak finale. Like, there's nothing but happiness for John Kiely, I think. Has there been a team that every neutral was cheering for more loudly than Limerick yesterday? Waterford 08
were the
anybody
people's
against
champions.
Kilkenny most of those years.
Yeah, but yeah. Waterford, I think, were the people's champions, and they were like this Limerick team. I'm sure we'll get to know them over the next few years. But besides Shane Dowling and Kane Lynch, like these are just guys who were really good at underage and are now really good. Like Kyle Hayes played in the 2016 minor final. He won an under 21 last year,
and he's still only 20.
Yeah, and he won an under 21 yesterday. And like you know, he had Gerald McInerney beat up a stick yesterday. So for fellas like that, they just take it in their stride. Whereas I think the Waterford team in 08, like John Milan and Ken McGrath, Dan Shannon, they were
some of them had hurled without helmets.
Let's put it a different way then. Is this the happiest we've ever been for All Ireland winners? I think it is. I've never felt as happy seeing any.
And Galway last year, were you not pretty happy last year that Joe Canning?
Of course I was, but I was more happy for this team. Just seeing John Kiely speak out, seeing Shane Dowling speaking after the game and urging the fans to go mental and stuff, that was just amazing.
They're a really great sporting county though. Like by a bizarre coincidence yesterday, I actually ended up in the lift with JP McManus in Croke Park going back up. He had come out of the dressing room and I was going back up to the press box and he was trying to find a way out of Croke Park, and the poor man was absolutely exhausted. But you could see they were like, yeah, you know, it's a thing that too many people have waited too long for. Like John Kiely even made the point that you know, it's a shame that there are so many really good Limerick hurlers and so many really good Limerick teams that have never won this before. You know, they have probably underperformed over the last 5 years or whatever it is, but I'm sure it won't seem like that.
I think it transforms hurling that, like, they were the eighth favourites. I saw somebody tweeting yesterday and I didn't check it, but heading into the year. So if you're Wexford and you're actually having those conversations over the winter about being realistic All-Ireland contenders and putting the whole system in place, like, you know, you can be properly energised by what's happened with Limerick hurling over the last couple of years. There's the picture of McManus.
But the thing with Wexford is we now need them to win next year's All-Ireland to level the amount of counties that won All-Ireland in the 90s, because it's five now in this decade compared to the six. And there's only been four football All-Ireland winners this decade, so it goes to show.
It's not going to be any more either.
Yeah, it's not going to be any more, you're right.
2 years left.
Exactly. Back page of the Irish Daily Star is Green Party. Dowling urges Treaty fans to revel in glory. Back page of the Sun then is a team photo. I feel like someone is going to wake me and shake me, boss Kiely in dreamland. And if you can make out at the very bottom right there, you can make out Keane Lynch trying to have to do that Dele Alli celebration, covering his right eye there, but kind of in the middle of it, not quite succeeding with it right there. Front page of the Daily Telegraph sports section then, looking to...
There he is. Did he not get it right? Is that not it?
He got it right there, but the picture that we got was just snapped just a little bit too soon. What's on that? The back page of the Sun. That's the Dele Alli celebration, the deliberation, if you'd like. It's he did it in the first Premier League game of the season, and people are like, oh, that's kind of cool, let me do it. And then they realise that it's actually very, very hard to do that.
With a helmet on.
It's even harder to do it with a helmet on, but you've got to get your hand in a very special position to do it. I spent half my weekend trying to master it, and I eventually did. OTB
AM. Thanks to Screwfix.ie, championing the trade with a choice of over 20,000 quality trade products.
Look, we knew Galway, we kind of had our purple patch in the second half, and we knew their purple patch was coming. I was kind of getting worried it's weird, but as we're going further ahead, I was thinking they're going to get something, and they popped up with a goal and draw on a serious second goal, as I'd like, you know. But we've talked ourselves in this situation. as soon as they got that perfect match, we know next ball to say puck out or anything, we just need something positive on it just to turn that on its head, you know, so it's in our direction then.
You guys left Galway waiting out there for a few minutes coming out, and I asked how they're celebrating now. I asked Tommy Walsh upstairs at me, you know, what's going on when they're maybe kept a bit late, and Tommy said, actually, you tend to not even notice time. You don't see or hear or feel time in the dressing room. Is that what it's like?
Yeah, it's weird. Like, the whole thing, literally, it's over like that. Like, you know, half time seems like a minute or two. You're just literally getting comfortable, and next thing you're up on your feet, getting going again. Like, but it's nearly every match is the same, especially the hurling as these days now. It's everything so quick pace and everything. Like,
when 8 minutes of extra time was announced, what did your heart and mind say?
Just to get it over, I was praying to God that the ball would go dead at some stage or something. Like, but look, I trusted all the teammates. Like, the backs were under serious pressure, and they've been absolutely superb all year. Like, and they did it again there again today. Then, like.
Well, that'll be a very youthful John Kiely, who is actually Kyle Hayes, that we've just been listening to, as opposed to John Kiely. So, dud information for me there. Apologies for that. Reminder, OTB AM is live with Screwfix.ie, championing the trade with a choice of over 20,000 quality trade products. Speaking of the actual John Kiely, though, we were talking about the wides earlier on, off air. You made the point that he wasn't that concerned about it heading into the game, that actually if there were a bunch of wides, that not that it was part of the plan, but that they had a... They discussed it and they could deal with it.
Yeah, he said afterwards, like, we just asked him about, you know, the elements of the performance, and obviously the wides were the one sort of, you wouldn't say a blemish, because you win in All-Ireland, there's no blemish, but the dangerous thing, the thing that nearly put them within Galway's range. And he said that they didn't focus on it too much beforehand. His point was that if they were getting shots off, they were playing to their rhythm. They weren't getting bottled up. Like, you saw the three goals that Limerick scored came from turnovers. Well, they just did not want that to happen. They wanted to play the game at their pace. They wanted to attack in the structure that they wanted in the first place. So he just said, no, get your shots off, get them away. And like, if you're doing a diagnostic of Limerick's performance yesterday, like, a lot of the stuff is up here, but their shot selection is on the floor. Like, there were, you know, there were...
Hail Marys.
Hail Mary jobs, yeah. Now, like, there are days when those go over the bar, and they have enough sweet strikers of the ball.
In the first couple of minutes, I think they had three wides after 3 minutes, and some of them didn't look like they were Hail Marys. Some of them were like, okay, that's somebody come from midfield on the run. We've seen them go over all year. And definitely you had this weird sense that actually they're going to allow Galway to still be in this, but they are five or six points better than Galway.
Yeah, they were definitely yesterday. I thought the two biggest points of that first half were Declan Hannan's points. You know, the first one was the intercept ball where he came from behind Joe Canning, cut out a pass and put it over the bar. And the second one was a really long range point from about 80 metres when everybody else was missing.
And they are Hail Marys. Like, well, the second one was a Hail Mary.
Yeah, well, the only thing is, if your centre back is Declan Hannan, a fella who played the first 4 or 5 years of his intercounty career as a centre half forward, I think you've a better chance than most of getting those sort of points. You know? And they've done that all year. That half back line, like, I've kind of thought going into the game that the two areas where Limerick would struggle would be, like, their half-back line are very good ball players, but they might not have been the stickiest man markers. Like, Dermot Burns and Declan Hannan going forward are brilliant. And that their full back line, while they're good defenders, weren't physically the biggest. But neither of those things were a factor at all yesterday.
I wonder where Limerick, like, just in terms of the Hail Marys, whether that was calculated as well, that if you have the ball, say, somewhere in the Galway half, or even just on the edge of your own half, that if the person in corner forward has a chance of getting beaten to the ball by his man, that don't give the ball in, put the ball dead, because we're going to be so well prepared on Galway's puck outs. Put the ball wide, do not give Galway the opportunity to turn you over. Avoid turnovers at all costs, but rack up that wide count all you want. Maybe that was the plan. Maybe they, and like we did see on Skehel's puck outs, they were outstanding, the pressure that they put on the Galway back. So there might have been some sort of logic behind it in that regard as well.
Yeah, I think there probably was. You know, if like the last thing you ever want to do is leave a ball go short to the goalkeeper, because all of a sudden they have the play and you're kind of, you're in an attack mode, you know, so there are gaps in behind you. I think Limerick won 29 of 36 of their own puck outs yesterday. I don't know what the stats were on Skehel's, but I don't think they were anywhere near as high. But I think that statistic is...
That's amazing, because they weren't going short.
Like. Yeah, but I think Galway were going longer. I think Limerick were going small bit more mid-range, and that's where they had their targets.
Yeah.
But 29 of 36 is, that's a football statistic.
Yeah, you know? They were attacking that left side of the Galway defence, certainly in the first half, and they were like, okay, we have a big bright yellow helmet over there, and he's going to catch everything for the first 15 minutes, and it worked for them very well. Here's what Tommy Walsh had to say after the game. Have a look.
We had an epic battle here. Won't go down as a classic when it came to games that people rave about, but Limerick certainly won't mind.
They won't. And like, it's funny enough, they're the kind of games I love, because I know the semi-final, the Limerick-Cork one was one of the great games of, I suppose, any era, because of the pure amount of scores. But I thought today was brilliant for intensity, work rate, attacking, but defending as well. Like, there's a lot of remarks going around about the wides that happened there today, but I think a lot of that was to do with the pressure the defence and the midfielders were putting them under. And I just thought Limerick, the reason they're champions is they went out like they were playing their back gardens. They didn't know that they hadn't won an All-Ireland since 73. They didn't realise that this might be their only chance of winning an All-Ireland final. They just went out and played as if they're in their back gardens, and they got the rewards in the end.
They really did. And even though the fact that it nearly got stolen away from them. I think it's 68th minute Galway were behind by 8 and they began clawing back one by one by one by one, especially with Joe Canning, who was immense. It nearly could have gone to a draw.
It could have, yeah. And I was after being on the radio, and when Shane Dowland put that ball in the back of the net, I said, game over. I told all of off the ball that the game was over, and suddenly they came back Galway, and that's what champions do, you see. They have the confidence of the previous year of playing through tight matches and getting over the line. And Canning was immense in that second half. He stood up when the game needed someone to take away the scruff of the neck. He definitely did it for Galway, and Padraig Mannion as well, I thought. And when he buried that free into the top corner, like, it was game on, and next minute he scores another free and had that chance. It wasn't even a half chance, it was kind of a tenth of a chance, if you like. That last, I'd say, was from 100 yards, and as well, it was out past his own 65, but it was also on the sideline, so that throws in another few yards into it. So really, you can't have anything only pride for that Galway team, because the game was over and they did not let themselves down here today, but things, they just weren't flowing.
Yeah, more from Tommy and his post-match analysis and reaction over the coming days. Now, Darren is here to take us through everything else that's going on. Is there anything else going on? There
isn't. Not a whole heap, Gerard. As you can imagine, the Limerick story dominating the discourse this morning. For the first time in 45 years, they are waking up as the All-Ireland hurling champions. Liam McCarthy will be spending winter in Limerick after they edge Galway by the narrowest of margins. Shane Dowling summed up his emotions in the immediate aftermath of the All-Ireland success, saying it was the realisation of a lifelong dream. Manager John Kiley feels the county will now get the respect they deserve and can no longer be treated as second-class hurling citizens. The Gaelic grounds in Limerick will host the homecoming for the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Champions later. Huge crowd expected. Tickets still available, eventbrite.ie. They are free. It's due to start at around 7:30. The scale of the achievement perfectly captured by local radio and Spin Southwest. This is how their commentator Valerie Wheeler called the final moments.
It's all over! Limerick are All-Ireland champions for 2018! The win is finally over! It is 45 years since Limerick have lived to the Limerick RD, and they have done it here in Croke Park! Oh my God! Limerick are All-Ireland champions for 2018! The place has gone mad! I'd say, oh my God, the players... I'm totally shocked. I'm so... What has gone on here? Oh my God. Limerick are 2018 All-Ireland champion. Oh my God. Oh my God, I'm actually totally emotional here, guys. There's tears are streaming down my face. I am so happy for those boys. I've followed them since January, all through the league when they're promoted, all through the championship, and of course beating Carlow and Kilkenny and Cork to get to the All-Ireland final, and they have done it. I'm so proud of them.
Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah,
breathtaking.
Hello,
stuff. The way we love sport, the emotion. Manchester United manager Jose Mourinho says he plans to kill his players with kindness because tough love is not working. In the wake of the Premier League loss to Brighton, Mourinho says he does not want to be critical of his players as people do not accept it. He says he will only speak positively about them regardless of the outcome of the match. United beaten 3-2 by Brighton, and when asked about the performance of his players, Mourinho said he has decided now that he's just going to say nice things.
In previous season, especially last season, when I was a critic with my team, when I debate too openly with you our performances, then you were the ones that criticized me in a very hard way by going against my team, by going against my player, by being too open. So I think this season I'm going to try to speak in a very happy way when my players have great performances, but close myself when things are not going well.
It's a very good morning for Ellen Keane after she won gold for Ireland in the pool yesterday. The Dubliner finished first in the 100 metres breaststroke to deliver Ireland's first gold medal at the World Para Swimming European Championships. Keane controlled the race from the moment she hit the water and led right up until she touched the wall to win the final by more than 5 seconds. Well, her medal was her second and Ireland's third at the event after Nicole Turner's silver at the National Aquatic Centre. Turner finished fifth in the women's 100 metres freestyle yesterday to round off the event. Well, finally to rugby, Dan McFarlane looks set to start his role as Ulster's new head coach today. He has reportedly officially left his role with the Scottish Rugby Union. It has been 4 months since he was appointed as John O'Gibbs' successor, but the SRU dug their heels in and wanted him to serve out a 9-month notice period. It appears a compensation package may have been agreed and McFarlane will likely take up the position just 11 days before Ulster start their Pro 14 season campaign against Scarlets.
It's almost like money makes things go away. It's like... I think this contracts is very, have a value.
Yeah, I think this is very late news. I was chatting to Rory Best on Saturday and he said he'd be there in time for the European matches, which was a big coup for them, something I hadn't heard before, and clearly it's been put forward a little bit more again. I guess, what's the point in hanging around and staying with Scotland for the European until the European matches in the Champions Cup and not like staying until the November Internationals? So that makes perfect sense given he's not going to win until January.
Yeah, fair enough as well. If you're Scotland thinking, are you gathering information to give to the IRFU ahead of the... when next Six Nations and World Cup, or are you actually, you know, like, kind of, you would expect him to be? Like,
that's what the gardening leave is for. Put him on gardening leave, let him sit at home, but don't let him start his new job. Be as disruptive as possible.
I like your style, Darren. let's bring you some Shane Dowling. Here he is talking about the need to party.
You know me, and anyone who knows me knows I'm not short of words. I just can't believe it. I honestly can't believe it. It's all I've ever wanted since I was a young fella, and we eventually got there. I don't know how many prayers I said there when Joe was in the last ball, but I just can't believe it. It means the world to me, and more importantly to my family and my friends and my club. You mentioned the likes of Liam Kennedy. I would not be standing here right now if it wasn't for them people. And I'm going to say one thing. I stood here 3 weeks ago and I pleaded with the fans to give us space and to allow us focus. I now say to the fans, can you please go absolutely mental for the next couple of weeks?
Absolutely right, Shane. Go off and enjoy yourself. Can I ask you, what did it feel like burying in that goal in today's 16-0?
I dreamt of that numerous times before, and for it to come true, it's just mad, Damon, and I just can't believe it.
Shane Dowling there after another amazing performance as a sub. Is he the greatest sub in hurling history now?
I think somebody had a statistic yesterday that output wise he probably is, you know, because not that Limerick have reinvented anything here by having subs that can make an impact, but there was definitely cause to say that he could have started that game yesterday and a lot of the games this year. But you know, it's a little bit like Mickey Hart made the point about his bench a couple of weeks ago after they scored 2-4 against Donegal. Like, when guys can actually, when you can trust fellas to deliver something off the bench, like, that's a talent in itself, you know. And it works against those players getting a start. But, like, it's the winning of games.
Because he'd talked before about being a sub under John Allan and hating it and thinking, okay, then I'm not actually ever going to make it. But, like, having somebody like Shane Dowling not be heartbroken about the fact that he's not starting all year, that's also a testimony to the manager. Now, who knows, maybe Shane Dowling was heartbroken all year long and kept thinking, I'm going to get into the team. But at no point did it look like he was huffing. And
yeah, it seems like, I'm sure it takes a bit of a buy-in, but John Kiely just strikes me as kind of an impressive, you know, he has that kind of, I mean, I remember the first time I ever interviewed him was last year when he got the Limerick job, and there was a story breaking about Barry Nash, who was temporarily off the panel. And as it happened, the day the story broke, Kiely was up for an interview at something in Croke Park, and he knew the question was coming, and he knew we had to ask it. And he gave us one of these answers that wasn't kind of it was one of these stories that wasn't really. Barry Nash was back on the panel a couple of weeks later.
Yeah.
But like D'Antoni Daly, like, he had this kind of, look, lads, this is the answer I'm giving you. Take it and go off, you know. And I kind of admired that around him. Like D'Antoni Daly described him last night in the Sunday game as a gentleman, but with that kind of steel about him. And that's exactly what he seems to have. And I can imagine that if there's anybody delivering a message to you that despite the fact you're not starting a game, you're a very important part of what could be an All-Ireland winning Limerick team, Shane Dowling is exactly the man to buy into that.
It's kind of like if you describe a player as somebody who you want on your team, and you hate to be up against him, it kind of like suggests that They're kind of a bit of a nasty character on the pitch, but they do what is required and stuff like that. Is John Kiely the managerial version of that? That when it comes to media dealings, he'll do what is necessary, but get him outside of that zone, get him man to man. He's an absolute gentleman. I wonder, is that what?
No, he was very good yesterday. Now, any time I've dealt with him, he's kind of like he's been very kind of thoughtful about it. He he's a typical hurling manager. Like you know, like he doesn't suppress what he's feeling when he speaks, you know, publicly, which a lot of guys do now. Like it's just become the de facto setting for inter-county managers in football and hurling. And he was very honest. Like we asked him yesterday, like, are you prepared? He hadn't even hit the Limerick dressing room by the time he came into the media room to speak. And we said, are you prepared for this now? Like, you know, because you could hear that media room was right beside the Limerick dressing room. You could hear the Limerick people saying, there's people still out on the pitch. Like they were going mental, like, you know, and I can only imagine what it's like in City West. But he said, to be honest with you, I'm kind of dreading it. Like I'd love to go off somewhere quiet on my own and kind of reflect
watch
on
the
it.
Game back.
Yeah, because I read Joe Canning's interview with Vincent Hogan on Saturday and he said that the night of the All-Ireland, which was also in City West for Galway last year, was a bit of a... It was just being pulled and dragged in every single Twitch direction. But I think that kind of summed up John Kiely, the fact that...
He read the Canning article, did he?
No. I'm just making the comparison. But he kind of just said that, like, with the job done, he didn't want to have to go back into the maelstrom and the madness of being hoisted aloft as the All-Ireland hurling winning manager. His job was done and he'd prefer to have slinked into the shadows if he had the option.
That's pretty impressive. Geraldine Neenan has been in touch on Twitter, hashtag OTBAM, to say, lots of talk of a bank holiday in Limerick today, but special shout out to my own employers, Nyron Limited, who actually gave us all the day off. Well, that is very impressive and well done, and everybody else should be doing exactly the same thing in Limerick. Let's head to the City West Hotel. Connor mentioned it there. Maura Trasny-Kellig is with us. She's out there this morning to see if anybody has actually woken up after the night that they had last night. How are you getting on, Maura Trasa?
It's very quiet here. The smell of toast, breakfast, tea and coffee in the air and the smell of, I suppose, relief and joy and thankfulness and all the emotions you can finally imagine that for Limerick finally to come over this hurdle. Me as a Galwegian sitting here, I think I do stick out a little bit like a sore thumb in here. But that said, everyone's still in bed. It's very, very quiet. The only people up seem to be tourists. The few people who perhaps might have accidentally booked in here this weekend, probably wondering what the madness was going on here. And some staff getting ready for the day ahead. And still, the cleanup is continuing from last night. I can only imagine it must have been insane. I spoke to one Limerick person, Lee Mahern, the Limerick PRO. He's awake. He said he got to bed early, just after 2 a.m. And he's got another long day ahead of him. So far, everyone else still in bed, but it's kind of weird. You know, when you're at the team hotel in the morning, you kind of feel an atmosphere of just relief and joy and just there's a lovely, I don't know what the word is. It's just that All-Ireland final feeling coming back home. And there's a lovely feeling as well of tiredness and the fact that everyone's going to find their second wind now and head back to Limerick later. Because from what I've heard, everyone in Limerick is off today.
Yeah, so the homecoming plans are beginning to have a fairly coherent form at the moment. Are they around the hotel for long? Are they getting out of there pretty soon? Do you know what the plan is for the players and the team?
Apparently the plan is they are going to round up a big crowd of the players to try and bring them to one of the children's hospitals, which is obviously traditional with the trophy. People do go to Lee McCarthy and the Sam Maguire to the children's hospital, be it either Temple Street or down in Crumlin. That's scheduled, I think, to start happening at around midday. And I suppose with that as well, once the team begins to move, perhaps everyone else starts thinking, right, we better start getting a head start as well on toward Limerick, be that they may be going home or to the Gaelic grounds. Unusually enough, ticketed, which I suppose shows the demand of fans wanting to go and see their heroes. So they're going to be taking the train from as far as I know. They're going to be getting into Limerick. Now, it's funny, you know the way the plans always start during the day? We'll be here by 4, we'll be here by 5. I've now heard it might be 6. And then an open-top bus out through Limerick City, out to the Gaelic grounds. And then I suppose God knows where they'll end up at some stage, again later tonight into tomorrow, I'm sure.
Yeah, all right. Well, shall we let you go and see if you can rouse anybody over the next hour or
yeah,
so?
Yeah, I'm going to go around and start knocking on doors now and say, get up, get up.
Thanks a million, and commiserations as well, obviously, as a proud Galway supporter.
I mean, if Galway won that yesterday, they actually would have stolen it off Limerick. Limerick were the far superior team. I mean, that said now, I mean, there was one point I was holding on to Tommy Walsh by the end of it, and he was like, it's still there, it's still alive. But I remember the 52nd minute I turned to him and I said, when would you panic if you were from Galway? And he said, oh, I suppose right about now, really, which is really unhelpful. But look, no, they were far superior. But it's funny, you know, you could see lots of Limerick people around us and you could see the flashes of the 90s coming back to them. The fear was there. And I don't think there was a huge exhale of relief when that final whistle blew and you couldn't blame them. I mean, it was beautiful. It was magical, much as it kind of broke a little section of my own little heart. But we in Galway ourselves know what that feels like. And we really hope now Limerick get the same joy out of it.
Good stuff, Mark Chassa. We'll talk to you a little bit later on. Thanks a million. So if anybody out there in City West knows any of the lads and wants to get them to head down to reception, Mark Chassa will happily bring them live to you here on OTBAM this morning. One of the comparisons that we were making in the office a little bit earlier on was the age profile of this team and the Clare team from 2013. I think a significant difference in this team is that they beat everybody along the way, that the championship is completely different now. And like, not that that Clare team fluked that All-Ireland, they were clearly, they deserved to win the All-Ireland, but this Limerick team have done it in a much harder fashion than anybody else has ever had to win it because of the new structures. And so this is a team that you have a sense will get better and will be here for a couple of years.
Yeah, the other thing, like, I think it's like, it's one of the greatest All-Irelands ever won, and they had to do it that way because of the, you know, the exposure you have to basically every other team in the competition after the round. But as well, people forget this, but like when they got promotion from Division 1B, like, I would have drawn a line under that and said, look, whatever happens, this is a
great
successful year.
Because
they had 7 years trying to get out of 1B, and it had become a thing, like, you know. And they had to beat Galway to get out of 1B. And I remember being at the Limerick-Dublin game, a total blowout of a league game down in the Gaelic grounds. But you could tell from John Kiely afterwards that that was one of the three games, obviously the Wexford game, or the Galway game, and who else was in 1B? Maybe Offaly game, that they had gone after thinking that it was a threat to their promotion. So like, they went at that. I thought they were the best team in Munster, like, particularly the way they came back against Cork that day was exceptional, yet didn't make a Munster final. And that's why I didn't really think that maybe this was their year, because they were poor against Clare and Ennis when they needed to be good to make a Munster final. Because it's all well and good writing that off now, but at the time you would have thought that a Munster title was the summit of Limerick's ambitions. Like, it was a huge thing for them to win, despite the fact that they do have players in the squad with Munster medals. Yeah. But to do that and then to come through it all.
It was a different team and a different setup. This doesn't feel like the same team at all, really, as that. And it's like not that long ago, really.
Yeah. But even the team last year, I had a look at the team that were beaten by Kilkenny by 3 points in Nolan Park in a poor enough game where Limerick shot a lot of wides. And I think there's 6 or 7 changes to that team. And like, you look at the number of players who have come up from the under 21 so quickly, like, that's just, it's good management. But I was talking to Maurice O'Brien recently, who was with the Limerick under 21s this year, and Maurice was part of the, he was, I think, 2 of the Limerick teams that won 3 under 21 All-Irelands in a row back in the turn of the
he was a player on them.
And he's actually the only player from those 3 teams to win a provincial title, and he won it with Dublin when he came up. So none of them went on to win a provincial title, but he made a point that the Limerick setup now is so streamlined that once you're in that academy, and Anthony Daly had a really good piece about the academy that he worked in the Examiner on Saturday, but that academy is so streamlined that you're kind of part of the system, like, you're never really out of it. Whereas those players, they were all just kind of spat out as seniors. And then a senior manager would come in, he'd pick some of them, he wouldn't pick other fellas, and then the senior manager would be replaced. He'd call in fellas that weren't part of a senior setup for a year and had kind of gone a small bit backwards.
Yeah.
And they never really got any traction from it. But because the thing seems to be so managed, well managed in Limerick now at underage level, I think not only will this team get better, but there's guys we haven't even seen yet that are bound to come through.
The real impressive thing, just you reminded me of it when you mentioned Clare there, is the way this Limerick management team have learned within the 1 year. Because what happened to Limerick when they lost to Clare? What was the single biggest factor? It was John Conlon destroying them in a full forward. And I thought going into the weekend that that was the one reason why I thought Johnny Glynn should probably start a full forward and why he should probably be kept in there. And that's probably why he did end up staying in there. But Limerick had learned from what happened against John Conlon, and they were prepared for the Johnny Glynn threat, and they had learned from that. And that is certainly something that you can see developing over the next couple of years. They'll look at what happened to Clare post 2013. How can we learn from what they did? I'm sure they'll, like, Kinnark will be able to inform them on a thing or two what happened over there. That this could be very, very different to what happened there in 2013, despite the fact that the age profile, you can make comparisons for sure.
Yeah, but the problem with that, like, the Clare team, it wasn't the fact that they didn't win in All-Ireland since then. It's the fact that they didn't even get back to Croke Park until this year. Their fall from kind of from top level competitiveness was very marked. Whereas I don't, like, it's impossible to say now whether Limerick are going to win another All-Ireland in the next 5 years.
Sure.
But I still, like, they'll be, like, we'll see them in Croke Park next year. We'll see them in Croke Park the following year. They're too good, and they seem to be too level headed and too well managed not to make a big impression over in the next 4 or 5 years.
We streamed the BGE Under 21 All-Stars last winter time, and Joe Canning was the ambassador, and so he was kind of the, you know, the big draw in the room. But there were all these young lads from Limerick. Like, obviously, we all knew Keane Lynch because he had already played in the senior team. But like, him and Galan were there picking up awards, and Conor Whelan was there as well. And you're like, ooh, geez, he's Galway. I've got some good young talent coming through. There's a lot of Limerick lads in this room. Mm. And here they are now, like, with as many All-Ireland medals as Joe Canning has, like in the space of 12 months. That speed with which they've come through and with which they kind of found themselves happy to be at senior level. Like, Galan has a bit of dog in him. Mm. You know, he could have got sent off yesterday. Obviously, it did look like the referee was not going to send anybody off unless you killed somebody. He's happy to book you, but there was a high tackle where Galan kind of like took the arm away that has been a yellow card all season. Like, they were men very quickly in senior hurling in a way that a lot of teams coming through under 21 don't become men for a couple of seasons.
Yeah, I think as well as that, they kind of harnessed that. Like, Limerick teams were always, you know, they always had great energy. They were always very physical. But you don't want to sort of give everybody the same label, but like the teams that got the 96 team, for instance, Gary Kirby's team, they had a great physicality about them. They had a great energy, but you wouldn't be certain whether they were going to do it, you know, when they got to the final. Whereas this team seems to have, rather than just go very methodical, they seem to have been able to harness that while also being a very kind of thoughtful hurling team.
Yeah, there's a wildness to them, and that's not about their character or their play, but it's like, I don't know what's going to happen here.
Yeah, look at Gorrod Hegarty yesterday. Like, he didn't shoot the lights out, but look at the number of times he turned people over. He tormented people. He just went around hitting. Like, for a fella who basically started out full forward, like, he absolutely tore into everything that moved. And they have that energy, but it's all... They seem to trust that they have the structure around them, that their hurling will shine through at the end.
Yeah. Where's that come from? Is that John Kiley?
Yeah, I think they've been coached very well coming up through the Limerick Academy. I know Anthony Daly was talking about these hurlers from 2-3 years back. Now, they never won a minor All-Ireland. They got to two finals, I think, maybe 3 years apart. But, like, it was clear that there were enough guys that they were going to be able to... And, like that and the Piercy team, has been, like, they nearly won back-to-back All-Ireland club titles this year as well. Like, there's a culture of winning, I think, that's possibly ingrained in the team before they actually became a senior Limerick team.
Yeah, and it should also be remembered that it's very hard sometimes to go ahead and win an All-Ireland when one of your, like, a large section of your team is still involved with the club all the way up to St. Patrick's Day. It's like...
Yeah, well, if you look, like, over the years, like, Armagh have struggled because of Cross McLean. Like, the Dublin hurlers have struggled in a big way because of Coola for the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Like the Dublin senior football team don't have a single player from St. Vincent's on the team. That's how they can kind of carry on unperturbed. But it has been a factor for teams in the past that if you have a club team that's so dominant from which you draw 7, 8, 9 players, it's a very hard thing to then just plump them into the senior setup when they come back.
Yeah, which again suggests like an understanding of how to manage your resources properly, how to manage that reintegration with the team, kind of say, look, there will be players coming back and you are going to be fighting for your position, but I need you to do this job now, and this is your window of opportunity to nail a place down.
Yeah, well, it kind of just feels that, I don't know how well it's kind of coordinated or orientated the whole thing was from Giant. It does have the feeling of one of those years where, you know, the law of unintended consequences, guys actually came into the team and then started playing well, but yeah. it might not have been
preordained,
but as a season, it's hard to write a more satisfying season given the caliber of teams that they've beaten to win this All Ireland.
Yeah, well, when you consider when the Super 8 was introduced in football, there was a crisis in the hurling community. It's like, oh my God, the Super 8 is going to completely dwarf us. Everybody's going to be talking about football. It's going to be wall to wall football. What the hell are we going to do? It's like, okay, well, that got fixed pretty quick.
Yeah, I still think, and this is slightly off topic, and I know nobody in Limerick will care this morning, and nobody from Galway would have made any difference. But that game yesterday, as an All-Ireland final, felt like it was a bit of the kind of preserve of the competing counties because of the time of year that it was played at.
Yeah.
And I think All-Ireland hurling finals are brilliant Irish cultural occasions, and I think they're slightly diminished as Irish cultural occasions by virtue of the fact that...
It's in the middle of August.
Yeah, like, people are on holidays. Like in September, the colleges are back, the summer repeats on television are finished. It feels like the reset button has been kind of pushed on Irish life, and we're all paying attention to the same thing again. And that's why All-Ireland finals are so memorable, even ones that aren't great All-Ireland finals. And I think because the thing was in August and we're all a bit scattered as a society, I think it's probably slightly diminished just as a kind of a cultural event for everybody in
Ireland.
Could
you fix that by flipping the football and hurling? Like, I mean, I don't know why or when they decided that the football had to come last, but we don't have to be slaves to that tradition, do we?
I still think the two finals should be in September. I know that there's a knock-on effect. I know that there's an issue with clubs. I know that we have to give a greater window to clubs. And at the moment, It's not in the good situation, but I think the sacrifice is probably too great. I think, like,
we'll go back to back first and second.
Yeah, maybe, like, you know, but I thought the prelude to the All-Ireland hurling final this year
was too short.
Wasn't as concentrated, or it didn't get the kind of attention that, like, we were still talking about the All-Ireland football semi-finals on Tuesday, you know, and then all of a sudden we were kind of, okay, what are we looking forward to this week? Whereas the finals always, like, particularly in September, like, September in Ireland is a very, very dead sporting month, and we're going to find it very, very dead this year because we only have that football final at the very, very start of the month. And the hurling final and football finals always filled that void incredibly well because there was so much attention around them. And again, not that it will matter to anybody from Limerick, but I just think it is slightly diminished as a kind of an Irish event by virtue of the fact that in August we're all a bit, you know, all over the place.
And that's not even allowing for the fact that the football final is supposed to be on in 6 days' time, and like the build-up to that would have started the day after tomorrow, you know. So like instead, this year it's an anomaly that it gets whatever 10 days of build-up, which is one of the positives of the Pope arriving and all that sort of stuff. So like it's an amazing one. I wonder, are we not going to realise this though until a few years down the line when maybe the structure of and the hierarchy returns to order, if it does return to order, that Limerick's win yesterday is just such an unbelievable story. It's such a great news story that we don't quite realise what's after happening until we get a few more of these finals.
Yeah, I think so. But I think we'll feel it in September. You know, I think by the second week in September, when the whole thing is wrapped up, and it's just the kind of the weekly grind of the Premier League or whatever it is to fill the kind of sporting void, I think we'll feel it in a big way then, because it's just like I wouldn't class myself as a traditionalist, but like just September just is the month for All Ireland. It's the senior All Ireland finals. They're just part of the rhythm of Irish life. And while we've had an incredible hurling season, like I'm sure it'll rank up, like we've even forgotten matches that would be
all-time classics.
Yeah, would be all-time classic. Well, like we'll have to do a bit of a review at the end of the year. Do you remember that game? They were 9 points ahead, and the thing was a draw. But that's again the law of unintended consequences by squashing the calendar year. But I think everything worked absolutely perfect up until the All Ireland semi-finals. But I just think September is a concession too far.
Yeah. Like if it stayed the first Sunday, you'd be happy.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think there just is something about September, the fact that everybody is back on the same kind of hymn sheet, it gets more attention and it becomes more an event.
Yeah. All right. Some of the people getting in touch as well. If you want to get in touch with us this morning, you can hashtag us OTBAM. We're going to go to Limerick in just a couple of minutes' time and speak with Phil Bennis, the Limerick hurling legend. We'll get to him in just a moment as well. Who's your hurler of the year?
Joe Canning. Yeah, I thought like Limerick had one of those years where different fellas did great things at different times. Like I think in the betting, going into yesterday, the maybe Keane Lynch was the shortest priced, and he had a very good game
from
yesterday.
Limerick.
Yeah, from Limerick.
Pádraig Mannion didn't do enough to hold on to his favourite spot yesterday.
No, all the Sunday game lads last night gave Pádraig Mannion their hurler, like unanimously, all eight of them. But I just thought by virtue of what Canning did, like if you go back to the semi-finals, like Canning got them to the final, and he very nearly forced it to a replay. I thought he was monumental this year. I thought he was better than he was last year. But having said that, it'll come down to a player's vote off a shortlist.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're talking about a popularity contest.
The shortlist is kind of the key, isn't it? If you make that, then you've got a chance.
Yeah. Yeah. Like if there's a Limerick player, a Galway player, and
it'd be two Galway, would it? Could it be two Galway and one Limerick? Would that be controversial in itself? Or is it two Limerick?
Maybe one of the Clare lads, John Conlon. Or
John Conlon suddenly sneak back into it now?
Yeah.
I backed John Conlon months ago, so I hope he does.
It's hard to know who won it. Like Aaron Gallan and Keane Lynch were the shortest price, but I think Aaron Gallan's performance yesterday probably rules him out. So you're talking about Keane Lynch or Declan Hannan against Pádraig Mannion or Joe Canning. That's, you know, whoever wins in the straw poll of inter-county players there wins hurler of the year.
Let's head to Limerick and join Phil Bennis, who joins us on the line from Patrick's Well. Phil, good morning to you.
Good morning.
This is an unusual morning. They don't come around too often. How is everybody in Patrick's Well this morning?
Down very high. Down we passed through the village there late last night, and they were all out outside the pubs. They were very high to the great wind, and they're all delighted.
Where did you watch it? What was your situation?
I was at the match. I thought the halfback level was brilliant. And they were on top of Galway. They were on top of Galway and everything. They didn't let them. They didn't anything Galway tried to do. They were at a full practice all the time. They were Nicky Quaid's buckouts were brilliant, and they topped all the buckouts from the Galway goalie. They got 126 buckouts or 36. And the halfback was on top of that. Dick Lehanan had the best game I ever seen him then. And so that the forwards then, Keane Lynch, the forwards were very good as well.
45 years is far too long, Phil.
Well, I'll tell you, it's 45 years. It's great now to see that it is finished, that we have gone from it now, and that see a young team like this taking over. That'd be hurling to be an awful boost for Limerick. I'd say in Ireland at whole. This team are young. They showed grace, order and guts and style and discipline. They were a team now that they were one of the best teams ever come out of Limerick, I'd say. And they'll take over the mantle, and we're able to be at the talk for them.
What were you thinking yesterday, Phil, when Joe Canning was leading the Galway revival?
I thought I got a small bit of a fright, all right. But somehow the team, they didn't panic. They should have been out of sight at that stage, but right. But it's dangerous enough now at that stage, and almost then anything, you would get a bit of a fright. But knowing them, I suppose, again, to that character again that stood up and done and took over the game, you know, that kind of a team. It looked dangerous enough now when they did come back, but at the end of the day, they stood up again and drove it on and on again.
Yeah, what is it about this Limerick team that allowed them to push through when it was really backs up against the wall sort of job at the end there?
I don't know, they shouldn't have left them. They took their eye off the ball, let's say, for a while there. They left them back into it. They don't seem to panic at any stage, whatever about them. They don't. If they panic there, they were beaten. And I suppose it was dangerous enough, I suppose, to look back in it to be disaster if it was a draw, even it would be very bad. It wouldn't be great now. But I don't know how they allowed them back. But still, they stood up and defended again and drove on again.
I know before the game, there was a lot of questions about who should end up marking Johnny Glynn. I know even just amongst yourselves, you guys were having a debate about what you thought the right way to mark Glynn was. In the end, it worked out pretty good. Casey was sensational.
They never changed from the time, from the first match this year. They never changed. I just marked them in. Johnny Glynn, the bombs was on him, wasn't it? Was on Johnny Glynn, the Dermot Bombs.
Mike Casey ended up on him yesterday.
Okay, Casey was. Casey said it, yeah. Yeah, was on him well yesterday. See, Limerick won the whole championship this time without changing anything. Only sticking to the game they had. And they were able to mark the man that they were picked on at every match.
At what point did you start to believe? Was it like last second when the game is actually over, when the ball is in a Limerick hand coming out and the referee blows the whistle, or did you feel confident as the game went on?
I thought the first 10 minutes, it showed that I would. That the first 10 minutes, 15 minutes, I was outside my grandson there, and I said, I got to win this. They had the wind of it all the way through. The only danger they made was the abuse. They had the winning the whole time, and they were confident the whole time. They had the winning the whole way through, and to got in the time, they took the leg off the pedal there, and they did the bit, and it kind of gave us all a fright, but they still pulled out.
There was a line this morning in the newspaper, Phil, from John Milan, who was saying that there must be nothing like it. He was trying to put into words what it must be like to win an All-Ireland, which kind of reminds you of the list of unbelievably great players we've had in hurling that have never got this opportunity. So what would your advice be to some of those younger players in the Limerick squad to try and appreciate the greatness and the rarity of this achievement?
Well, I've been doing all I've enjoyed this week. After that, then, I'd walk away, put back to that club, play for that club, and show character on that club again, the character that they have, and drive on and keep this team. There's a lot in this team. There's more in this team. It's a lot more in this team, and I think let them do what they want this week, but just do it right. And I'd say that I'll have to go back training anyway near the end of the week because there's matches on in 2 weeks' time. But I would say there is I suppose there's a lot of onus on him now because he's gone past any surprises. Even what they'd done was nearly expected of them as a young team, even, which is a great boast on their behalf. So I would say that there is more in them. Like, I don't want to put any pressure on them, but there's more in them, and they'd want to stay at that to get the more. And if they do, they will get more. And I think they will.
But there's
more pressure on their shoulders now than ever because they're capable of it, and everyone knows they're capable of it. And when you're capable of it, you have to do it.
What will this do for hurling in Limerick City and Limerick County in general, Phil?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. Today now, you'll see hurlies everywhere. I'd say that to lift hurling in Limerick, to lift it mighty. There'll be hurling in the village. There'll be hurling in the city where there'll never be hurling because, I don't know, these crowd of youngsters, the imagination they have gripped of Limerick already is unbelievable. I have never seen it in my life, and I'm hurling on my life, I'm involved in hurling on my life, but I've never seen the imagination of these players, and it has to rub off of everyone in Limerick, even meeting the people. There'll be everyone with hurlies because, number one, that every young people say from 12, around 12 years of age or down or up, they know, they've seen them. And when the people, they've seen them playing and seen them winning, and it's a different area than my area, there is more media out here there now, and they're able for that. So they have to handle all that, but they will be able to handle that. If they do handle all that, they'll win more.
Phil, a big night for Patrick's Well, obviously. At least three lads on the team and three fairly important lads as well. They all had great games.
They had the three of them. Diabin, Dumbus and Keane. But even up to this, you could pass down the village, I said, for months. And I'm not living far away from them. I wouldn't be 200 yards away from them. And you wouldn't see them anywhere. I haven't seen them youngsters all year, hardly. Very seldom. So they have, I'd say what the, I'd say the back room was must be unbelievable, I'd say, the way they had them and the way that they play to such a plan and keep up playing such a plan. And
well, Phil, I'm going to hold you there because I think we can actually go to City West Hotel and join Cian Lynch, a pretty happy Cian Lynch this morning.
Right.
Oh, sorry, he's just going to be there 1 second. We're just setting up the Skype for it now. So yeah, Cian Lynch, good morning to you. How are you doing?
Hi, Ger. I have Cian with me and I'm just going to hand over the headphones to him right now and he'll be able to talk to you straight away. 1 second there. There you go. This is a groundbreaking year. I'm putting the headphones in. I'll keep talking while Cian puts on the headphones. Cian is here putting on the headphones so he can hear the studio. Can you hear now?
Yeah, Cian, good morning to you. How are you doing?
Good morning, Liz. How are you?
Yeah, so I've got to tell you that of all the things that you've done this year, the one thing that impressed Owen Sheehan the most was your ability to do the deliberation properly in the post-match celebrations.
It was a big struggle now, trying to get the old hand curved up was hard enough. Like I saw an old video this morning, but it's embarrassing. Like, sure, it's all part of it, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know if you know, we've got Phil Bennis on the line as well.
Oh, Jesus, Phil. How are you, Phil?
You must be delighted.
Over the moon now, jeez. I haven't come back down.
I know you a long time. It was a picture to watch. You had a great game yourself as well. It was a picture to watch. You could watch the match and you could nearly relax the whole way through with you, the way you were playing. And you're doing it all year. What you've done for Patrick's Well and Limerick, we'd never be able to thank you.
Ah, Jesus, Phil. Thank you very much. You've done an awful lot yourself, boy. It's great credit to you too.
But I tell you one thing. You're in my head everywhere I go. I fell asleep last night. You were running through my head. And, you know, you're something else. And I would say, Cian, enjoy it properly, which you will. You're a very steady crowd. And you're back to your clubs then next week. But
please go.
To some win, Cian. And I tell you one thing. The whole lot of you, yourself and all included. I don't think there was a bad player in this team. And yesterday, I was watching up for the match late last night. And the panel couldn't pick out a player that played bad. And you couldn't pick out a player that played bad. I think he were fooled after winning it, because I suppose stopping the crowd going into the field, they kept it a bit quieter, I suppose. But
yeah, I know.
Yeah, he were unbelievable. No one can say it. I've never seen the likes of it. And jeez, thank Phil, you all very much from the bottom of our hearts.
Thank you, Phil. Jeez, Lusa. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Keane, what was the actual game like to play in? Because as Phil said, you did look pretty cool during it. You got into the game very early on. There was like a hunting and packs mentality right from the throw-in. So you found your rhythm very early in the match.
Yeah, that was kind of the aim going into the game. Like, you know, we were watching Galway all year. They got off to great starts and we kind of said to ourselves, we need to go out here and try and go at them and bring the game to Galway. And luckily enough, we did. We got a few points earlier on and within at half-time, 4 points up. But Galway came out in the second half and we went 8 points up and all of a sudden our backs were turned and Galway had their foots in our throats and the game was in the mental pot, and that just shows the character of the team they have, and there's great credit due to them. You know, they had that never say die attitude, and we knew ourselves when there was a point, 2 points in it, that we had to keep focus and keep the heads down. And thank God Graham got a point there to put us up again, and thank God Tom Condon came out in the end with the ball. But come here, when you're actually in the game, you don't realise the whole frantic kind of side of the whole game itself. But it's only after, even this morning, I'd say I got about 10 minutes sleep last night. I was kind of turning and twisting, overthinking the whole thing. Like, but just coming down this morning and just seeing the people and realising you're actually here in the City West, it puts it all into, it makes it all a bit more realistic, you know, because last night, actually, you're saying to yourself, geez, did you actually winning All-Ireland medals there today? And it's surreal, really, still, you know.
It must be, because like even within the game itself, there's a big lead and then there's 8 minutes of stoppage time and then there's one goal and then there's a second goal. What's running through your mind when the second goal goes in?
I don't know. There was a moment of, geez, what's going on here now? Like, I was kind of looking around saying, stop, like, you know, 8 points up. There's a point to 2 points in it and they're kind of saying, oh no, we have to throw this away. Like, but I don't know, all year we kind of had the attitude of keep driving on. If we're up 2 points, down 2 points, if we're up 8 points, down 8 points, keep driving on, keep focus. And thank God we did, like, and Declan Hannon and Ferrison led the whole team and drove us on, and the whole mindset was unbelievable. But as I said, there's great credit due to Galway for what they did and what they've done the last few years. They set the bar for every team in Ireland. And look, we were lucky enough yesterday to get over the line and do this for not only us as a team, but for our families and friends, like, and for the people of Limerick. Because to see teams before us that have gone through the 80s and the 90s and the 2000s, there, some unbelievable players. And for us to actually get over the line and to have this reward for the whole county just means so much to us all, you know.
Kane, you were 8 points up when the clock ticked towards 71 minutes. Like, at that stage, like, do you make your peace with the result, or are you genuinely still in kind of game mode?
No, you have to always kind of stay in the game mode. Like, John Coyley's kind of instilled in our minds, like, the game isn't over until the final whistle is blown. Like, and I know, yes, we Galway came back, brought it back to a point. And we could have easily thrown away the game, you know, with Joe Canning's three there at the end, could have hopped anywhere, they could have buried a goal, and game could have been gone. So, just waiting for that final whistle, waiting for the referee to put the whistle in the mouth and blow it up, and to see the crowd lifting their hands. It's just, she even put into words here now, Fee, it's hard to actually do it, because none of us have experienced it before, and it'll only, I'd say, be the end of this week when we sit down at home with the family and try and do a Sunday game, or trying to up for a match or whatever it may be, and actually realise, you know what, we were actually out at Croke Park there last Sunday and did a great thing for Limerick City, because it's what Limerick has been crying out for the last 45 years, you know. People shedding tears there in the crowd. The mother actually hopped over the fence and got onto the pitch in Croke Park yesterday. I'd say there's still no warrant out for her, but you know, it means so much to everyone, like, which is unbelievable. So
I don't know if you've seen the photograph yet, but there's an amazing photograph of you and your mum just hugging on the pitch.
Is there? I didn't see it now at all. She probably has it already herself.
Oh, it's class. It's in the papers.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah. We found it on info anyway, so we'll send it to you. But it's just...
it'll be great.
It's just brilliant. Do you remember... Did you talk to her? Do you remember anything you actually said to her?
No. Even lads were saying what to feel like after the game. Like, but I kind of put the head down. I actually struggled to breathe for a few minutes, like, because you're kind of saying, jeez, we're after winning it all air. Like, a dream. It's a dream come true. But I remember the mother she jumped up out of nowhere and kind of, I grabbed her and just put the head on her shoulder, and it was actually a moment where I could actually just breathe for a second and kind of take in my old surroundings and realize, you know what, this is what it's about. You know, she was the woman that was there for me from the very beginning with the whole family, like, and just to see her there on the pitch, whether the shorts after her or the shorts not, like, just see her smiling and going around to everyone. You know, it puts it all into perspective, really.
I don't know if your phone is charged, but Tommy has just WhatsApped you the picture there if you want to have a look at it. I don't know if you're getting photographs or if you're, if you managed to plug it in last night, you were doing pretty well.
Tommy Rooney, hold on here now a second.
There you go, that's it.
If that's the only message on his phone this morning now, he hasn't.
I have another oh, jeez, I see it. Some hit me, don't I? Jesus, yeah, that's lovely now, in fairness. She'd be delighted with that.
That's it. It's a brilliant moment, Keane. It's like, I'm not sure, obviously I'd be very surprised if you saw it before the game, but it, the camera pans to John Kiely, who was like laughing at something and it seemed very, very relaxed during the parade. And it seemed that that was pervasive right throughout the camp all season, that there was a very relaxed attitude and a deep belief that that came from in your own abilities to go all the way.
Yeah, with John, kind of John and the whole backroom team have this attitude instilled in us, like, about taking every game as it comes, and there's no point blowing up a game something that it's not, you know. Because for years, even myself, going out playing Munster finals or All-Ireland quarterfinals, semi-finals, and even finals, you're kind of blowing them up, and by the time the game comes, you're actually worn out and wrecked. You have the game played 110 times in your head, like, and you're actually going out and you're nearly flat. But what we've kind of done is just kept the heads down, stick with each other, and, you know, kind of bounce off each other and train, or meet each other for an old coffee or a boy teacher in the week, just to see how each other are feeling, keep it kind of relaxed. And even yesterday in the dressing room before the game, we just kept the heads down and said, let's go out here, once we're inside in the white lines, go out and do what we've been trained to do since we're 4 and 5 years of age. You know, we dream of going out into Croke Park and representing our county and representing our clubs at the highest stage, and to get the opportunity to do it yesterday in front of our families and friends and people in Limerick, and to get over the line, it just brings great pride for me anyway, and for the rest of the lads to know we've actually done something brilliant for Limerick City, like, you know.
Yeah, completely. Keane, great stuff. Thanks a million. You've been really generous with your time. I think Declan Hannan is sitting beside you. I don't know if you'd
he's over there. I'll throw him at you there.
Yeah,
right?
Please do. Yeah.
So, lads.
Thanks a million. That's pretty amazing. Modern technology is wonderful, all the same.
It's amazing that I think that Keane Lynch is as fresh as he is at 9:02 in the morning after he's won an All-Ireland. That could be his greatest achievement of the season.
So we'll go back over to Mark Trasson, to Declan Hannan in just a minute, but they're overwhelmed.
Yeah, well, like, it'd be hard to be anything else, like, you know. Like, they didn't seem to be burdened down by the weight of history and all the rest of it, but, like, I'd say when you win, when the final whistle blows, when you're in City West meeting people who've, you know, soldiered through so many Limerick teams that haven't won All-Irelands in the past, I'd say it would be very, very hard not to be overwhelmed. And, like, they're one of the last great, you know, All-Ireland winning
famines.
Stories. Like,
yeah,
famines. Like, those famines are great stories when they end, the walk and the cup over the border, and it's probably just Waterford and Mayo footballers left.
Mm. We've got Shane Dowling on the phone from his hotel room. Shane, how are you doing? Good morning to you.
Morning, lads. You all well?
How are you feeling?
Fantastic.
Keane Lynch made it down for breakfast. You obviously haven't.
Yeah, Keane Lynch is probably sober. I'm only joking. I'm an early bird anyway, no matter what the circumstance is. So breakfast can wait another few minutes.
Here, listen, you've given one of the all-time great post-match All-Ireland winning interviews where you were telling the Limerick fans to go absolutely mental. What kind of a night did you have last night?
Absolutely mental, I can assure you. Yeah, and it'll be absolutely mental for another couple of nights as well, I hope. Listen, it's very important to enjoy these days, because we know only too well inside Limerick these days don't come round too often, finding it's the complete opposite. So listen, it really is magic, and sometimes you can't put into words exactly what the feelings are. And, you know, and post-match interviews after All-Ireland are probably a bit unfair, because players are liable to say anything, but, you know, you mean everything you say, and that's the beauty of it. And, you know, as I keep on saying, it's fine for me, and, you know, it's great for me to actually get that medal, but, you know, it's the hard work of so many people, and just to see the smiles in their faces last night walking into the City West, and knowing back in my home roads and in the Fiarsheigh, and my family in various different parts of Limerick and beyond, it was just, listen, it's just something that
you dream of, and like, I know that word is said a lot, but that's what happens. You do dream of these things, and when they eventually come true, as I said, especially in a county like Limerick that have been starved of success, it really just means so much.
Talk to us through the goal, Shane, because it's an unbelievable moment. It's something that a lot of what that you said was something in your own dreams. I think a lot of us were just so happy to see you get on the pitch and score that goal, which ended up being so pivotal in the way the game ended up concluding. What were you thinking as soon as that ball hit the back of the net?
Yeah, I was thinking before that, what a crap ball Peter Casey gave me across again. Plenty of abuse as well last night. But listen, when the, you know, I suppose, what can you say about it? You're since a young lad, I suppose, all you wanted to do was score a goal in Ireland final day. And I suppose the reality is, after the goal went in, I suppose the whole place probably to think it was game over at that stage, and me included probably got carried away in the next 15 or 20 seconds afterwards, and I think maybe everyone got carried away, and that's probably had a big part of playing what happened in the last 10 minutes. But it was just, what a feeling, by just to get a goal in Hill 16, running away, listen, it's just unbelievable, it really is.
Yeah, just talk us through your celebration, will you? What was your goal celebration?
Because I got plenty of abuse after the goal in the semi-final. So when I went in, they just did the same thing. So I said, you know what, I'm going to keep the routine on and do the same stupid celebration. So I'm sure you just do it to run yourself, literally. But listen, it's a great complaint to have that we get slagged after a goal celebration. I live with that, I can tell you.
Yeah, I'm sure. Listen, Declan Hannan is with us this morning as well. Declan, good morning to you. How are you getting on?
Good, lads, yourselves.
Yeah, you also made it down for breakfast. Shane Dowling is still up in the room. He didn't make it down just yet.
Yeah, he's not an early riser, as he was saying there. And I thought he was never going to stop talking there. Morning, though.
How are you getting on, Declan? What's your recollection of the actual game itself?
I don't know, I tell you, we were in control for 70 minutes of it, I suppose, and then for the last 10, Galway was a Galway onslaught, but look, we came out the right side eventually, so we're just definitely over the moon now this morning.
Tell us, like, at no point did you look panicked despite the fact that a big lead was being whittled down in injury time in an All-Ireland final. The team still retained a kind of sense of calm, and that's ultimately where the insurance slash winner comes from.
Yeah, look, I mean, I suppose all year we want to just give a performance for 70 minutes to stick to our game plan for the 70, 75 minutes, whatever it is, and it wasn't going to change yesterday because it was an All-Ireland final, you know, so that's all we did. It was nothing different to what we've been doing all year, and once the final whistle went, then it was just chaos for a few minutes.
What's your recollection then of that chaos? Who did you run to first?
Nicky Quaid ran straight into me and knocked me over, so I don't know, after that it was just a bit of a blur, you know. You're just trying to find the boys, you know, and then you're trying to look for your close family and friends and enjoy it with them, because they sacrifice a lot as well, you know.
Yeah, it's an amazing moment. I'd say even the Limerick fans yesterday were trying their best just to soak every little ounce of it in, and I'm sure you were trying to do the same, just to try and get every bit of moment of recollection as you possibly can on this unbelievably special moment.
Absolutely, I mean, it's 45 years, you know, that we've been waiting in Limerick to get Lee McCarthy back down there. So yeah, I mean, these days are there to be enjoyed, and, you know, I suppose before the game, all the focus is on giving a performance, but then after it, you know, you can soak it all in and stay out in the field for as long as you can, because, you know, All-Irelands don't come easy, so who knows what's going to happen next year. So, like, I mean, you have to just enjoy every single minute of this.
Declan, we asked you at the press night, had you written a speech, and you said you had thought about it all right. Like, were you as prepared for winning as you were prepared for the match itself?
Sorry, you say it again?
Were you as prepared for winning and all that kind of entailed afterwards, like the speech and the celebrations on the pitch? You know, were you as prepared for that as you were for the game itself?
Not really. Like, we sat down, I suppose, a couple of days after the semi-final against Cork and jotted down a couple of points to try and get the speech out of the way as early as possible, and then just, again, focus on the performance on the field, because I suppose at the end of the day, you know, if you don't perform inside those four white lines, you won't be going up the steps of the Hogan Stand to make that speech. So, I don't know. The celebrations will take care of themselves anyway.
Does the way you've won the All-Ireland this year make it extra special? You've beaten pretty much everybody. You've really stamped your authority on the idea that you are the deserving winners and the best team in Ireland this year.
Yeah, I think so. Look, I suppose whoever was going to win the All-Ireland this year was going to have earned it, you know, and you know, getting out of Munster is tough enough in its own province, you know, and then to beat Kilkenny and get over Cork and Galway, you know, it's nice. It does make it a bit sweeter, I suppose, that you've played against all the big teams in the country and come out on the right side of the majority of the results. Obviously, we had a blip against Clare in the middle of the year, but you know, we laid our foundations early in the Tipperary and Cork game, and then, you know, our performances were steady and to a kind of standard we'd set, and they were quite consistent, which, you know, is what you need to be in this year's setup, the way the championship is. So, look, it's, you know, it was a great year. It was very enjoyable. The more matches, the better, you know, and all that. A lot of guys, I suppose, would say the same thing, and it does make it a lot sweeter, anyway.
Declan, we all remember the scenes when Limerick won in Munster a couple of years back, and the pitch invasion that day, and, you know, that was a big, huge moment for the county. In a weird way, was not having those scenes repeated this year something that allowed the team to go away and just recalibrate through the back door and not actually be in the hassle? Or no, it wouldn't have been hassle to be in a Munster final, but do you know what I mean? There was like, you were not focusing on that anymore because you weren't in the Munster final, and then you had to just start thinking about, well, actually, we're in another competition now and there's a massive prize at the end of it.
Yeah, maybe. I suppose, like, we started playing on the 30th of December in the Munster League, and what we wanted to do was win as many competitive games as we could this year, and, you know, that was no different in the Munster Championship. We wanted to win the Munster, but, you know, it didn't happen. So, you know, we had to regroup fairly quickly and get ready for the All-Ireland series, and, you know, it was great to have a couple of weeks just to get ready for the Carlow game and then to move into Kilkenny game. So, you know, I don't know if you'd say if it was a godsend or what that you didn't get to a Munster final. We wanted to get there, we didn't. So we just had to recover and go a different route, you know. So, but look, whatever the route you take and you end up All-Ireland champions, we'll take it.
After the performance in Ennis, what happened? Like, what was that conversation like, and how quickly were you able to regroup?
We regrouped very quickly. The conversation was quite, you know, to the point. It was just a case that we didn't perform or didn't hit any of our targets that we wanted to hit in that game, and that's why the result was the way it was. And in all the other games we played this year, we hit the targets we set for ourselves, and we came out to the right side. So, you know, it was small things that, you know, went against us, and our a few things, you know, that we wanted to do, we didn't do against Clare, and, you know, you're going to get found out very, very quickly.
But you were, like, it didn't cause any kind of sense of panic or self-doubt to creep into the team?
Not really, I don't think so, because, like, we played Tip and Cork and Waterford, you know, and I suppose we'd proven to ourselves that we were good enough to be competing with them and to be beating them, you know, so the Clare game was a setback, but, you know, it wasn't going to derail us completely from the bigger picture of the whole championship, you know. So, like, I mean, John and the management team are great, and Caroline Currid, just to get us focused again and get us ready to go for the next round of the championship.
What about your own personal preparation for the All-Ireland final? Like, obviously, there's the whole captaincy role, there's the whole leadership role, but then there's, like, the fact that you're going up against one of the best hurlers in the country, one of the best hurlers in the generation, who's going to be a very important figure for the opposition. How much do you think about Joe Canning? How much do you watch specifically ahead of the final? Or do you at all? How does that work for you?
Of course you do. You always analyse the opposition, but I'd say, look, we concentrate on about 90% of ourselves and 10% of the opposition. And that's what we've done all year. You know, I tried to give a performance that we could, because we can't dictate how the opposition are going to perform, you know. But look, I mean, there's a massive trust between all the lines on the field with the Limerick guys this year. And it was a real 15, 16, 17, 18 men win yesterday, or whatever many subs came on, you know. And look, everyone just knew their job, and not one player is never going to win or lose a game for you.
No, of course not, but it's very important to make sure that you're confident enough in your own ability then to go and say, okay, everybody else needs to be doing the same thing. One thing that we were talking about earlier on was two big points in the first half from you. There were a lot of wides in that first half, so it was really important to get those scores, and they were fairly inspirational scores from like quite a long way out. So you must have been really, really happy with your own performance too.
Yeah, I was happy enough, I think. We started really well, but we just wasn't reflective on the scoreboard. We could have had 6 or 7 points in the first 10 minutes. I had a bad wide myself in that period as well. And look, it could have drained the life out of us, but I think the boys are just so composed and down to earth and focused on the game that in years gone by, it probably would have thrown us. But, you know, this year was just a bit different and it didn't.
Keane was saying there that the moment it sunk in for him was this morning, just milling around the hotel. Has it sunk in for you?
It hasn't really, to be honest. You know, it's been a bit of a whirlwind, I suppose, since the match yesterday. It's been quite intense. You kind of are in on the field after the game and then straight back to the hotel and the function last night and this morning and going out to Crumlin to the hospital there now in the next half an hour, I think. So I don't think it'll sink in until, I don't know, Thursday or Friday when we actually get a chance to sit down and just look back on the whole day and just to, I suppose, meet my family and my close friends that you want to share these moments with.
Well, Declan, it's been an unbelievable hurling season, and you know, as the point you made was, whoever wins the All-Ireland this year is absolutely going to deserve it. No one's ever going to be able to take this away from you. You've made history. You've ended one of the longest famines in GAA history. Congratulations. It's brilliant.
Yeah, thanks a million, lads.
Declan Hannan there giving us some thoughts from City West this morning. There's a chaos there in that whole thing. It's great.
There's a chaos there, but I think Declan Hannan, like, we interviewed him at the press night. It was the first time I've ever interviewed him. And you know when a fella kind of, like, he's not sort of in the customary age bracket for a captain, but you know when somebody has that kind of sense of calm in the middle of a storm, you know that they're going to make a good captain. And you could see it even there this morning. Like, even, you know, he seems to take it all pretty much in his stride, whereas you know, Keenan, I think Shane seems to be a bit more overwhelmed by it all.
Yeah, it's fair enough. A few comments for you. Trevor says, "Go on, the boys in green from Croom. The Costello family were there yesterday. Famine over, pure ecstasy. Casey, Mike, immense. Love the show. Been listening for years. Hon Limerick." Brian says, "Just Waterford left to the hurling counties to get an All-Ireland now. Hopefully they won't have too long to wait. Dublin too, maybe." Waterford, Dublin, All Ireland's for the rest of this decade would be like.
There's only one more year left in the decade.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm going to count 2020. Brian says, oh, sorry, I did that one. Traditional saying that hurling doesn't have tactics should look at yesterday's game. A masterclass in tactics by Limerick and a failure to adapt by Galway, says Darren. Sometimes, though, the winners get to write history, because if, like, the long range free goes over, or if it bounces in the square and somebody pulls on it and it's a goal for Galway, like, oh, they rope-a-dope Limerick. Like, you know,
yeah, and suddenly all of the things that didn't quite happen for you are just rendered irrelevant.
Yeah, exactly. It's he's right though. The person getting in touch there, Darren. It's like, it was a task, particularly from their own puckouts. Like, the bunch tactic and bringing players out wide was. It's not the most novel tactic. It's something we've seen all year. It's something we expected to see, but it worked a treat. So they're definitely right. And I guess there is some truth in the idea that Colin would have been heralded as perhaps tactical geniuses themselves, that they actually scored a late, late, late goal after the two other goals yesterday.
Yeah. Apparently Tyrone have decided that they're not going to participate in any coverage in the build-up to the All-Ireland football final with RTE. So they're sticking to their principles. Not entirely surprising, is it?
No, probably not. It's been going on long enough now at this stage.
If you were to suddenly change it the week before the All-Ireland final, it'd be a bit like.
Yeah, I think it's like, I do think it's a strange thing, but I don't knock as much kind of intrigue out of it as a lot of people seem to do. It just seems to be a personal thing between Mickey Hart and Tyrone and or Mickey Hart and RTE, and it sounds like everybody else has been kind of caught up in the whole thing. So
yeah,
it is their first All-Ireland since their boycott began. So if you're going to boycott a media organisation and then give them access during an All-Ireland, it's kind of like. Defeats the purpose of a boycott, doesn't it?
They'll have a lot of filler on the Sunday game if Tyrone win.
Yeah, well, I wonder will Tyrone legends participate for Up for the Match, actually? That'll be an interesting element.
I presume so.
Presume so.
Sean Cavanagh has no problems being the Sunday game pundit, so.
He'd be a busy man.
Yeah, I think RTE like to make a bigger deal out of it than it actually really is as well.
Possibly.
Yeah. All right, Conor, great stuff. Thanks very much for joining us this morning.
Cheers, lads.
Are you heading to City West?
I am. Yeah, it looks like the lads are going to be in Crumlin, though, so maybe I should head there instead.
Well, we can tic-tac with Mara Trasad to keep an eye on them. And if you see them out and about today, we'll be talking to them again a few times across the course of the afternoon. Check out offtheball.com for more details on that. So if you like this, you'll probably also like OTB AM, Ireland's only sports breakfast show. Subscribe to the OTB AM podcast stream or catch the show live on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook or offtheball.com every morning from 7:45 a.m.